We're back in Parshat Noach. I know it's been a long break for, at least for Sukkot, and also we were on and off during the Yom Noraim. So let's quickly recap what we've seen so far in Sefer Bereishit that brings us current. We saw the creation of free will, of Bechirah Chofshit in Gan Eden, and therefore the creation of reality where mankind can fully connect with Tov and fully connect with Ra. That's the essence of mankind and the fundamental basis of a meaningful reality, which has Bechirah Chofshit. Unfortunately, over the course of Parshat Bereishit, what we see is the overtaking of Ra in the world. Cain kills Hevel. We have Dor Enosh and the emergence of idolatry. The generation leading up to the Mabul becomes completely immersed in the search for physical pleasures, having a complete lack of self-control, lack of boundaries, in a way that leads to the worst kinds of Arayot and the worst kinds of Gezel. At that point, Hashem sees that mankind, in the words of the Chumash at the very end of Parshat Bereishit, is rak ra kol hayom. They're purely ra, and feels that he has no choice but to destroy the world. He does so by bringing the flood to the world, wiping out everything except that which is inside of Tevat Noach. When Noach leaves the Teva, Hashem promises Noach that he will never again bring a Mabul to the world, despite the fact that man is in a state of Yitzer Lev HaAdam Ra Mine'urav. And so last year, in our first year in Parshat Noach, we focused on that piece, which is how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu make such a promise? How could Hashem make such a promise? If we say that man can still reach that same level of Ra, and Hashem feels justified in having brought a Mabul to the world, then if man does reach that state of Ra once more, then what should he do? Destroy the world of the Mabul. But he's promising not to bring a Mabul. So does that mean that he's retroactive saying, no, you know what, I must have made a mistake, Chas v'Shalom. I must have made a mistake. And I wasn't justified in bringing a Mabul. So if man does get to that place, then I won't destroy the world of the Mabul. And what we did is we compared and contrasted these two key psukim of Perek Vav Pasuk Hei and Perek Chet Pasuk Chaf Aleph. The difference between Rak Ra Kol Hayom and Yetzer Lev HaAdam Ra Mine'urav. That the key there is the word Mine'urav. That previously the world had been in its Ni'urim state, in its state of youth, its state of adolescence. A time in life where there's no ability to delay gratification, where there's a search for physical pleasure without any sense of consequence. In that kind of reality, when one is in that state, that selfish reality of the Ni'urim stage, that necessary state of the Ni'urim stage, where Ra overcomes first, then it's Rak Ra Kol Hayom. But once one progresses and matures past the Ni'urim stage, once one actively, because again, we said a person can stay in their adolescent stage well into their 20s, 30s, 40s, till they get into the grave. One has to actually actively mature past that age, that not the age of adolescence, but the stage of adolescence, the stage of Ni'urim. Once one does that, then when one steps out of it, one can look back and say, oh no, that was only Ra Mi Ni'urav. And just like every single individual goes through a stage of youth and adolescence, where in their own olam katan, in their own small inner world, Ra does take over, and there's a reality of selfishness, and there's a reality of a desire for physical pleasure, and there's an inability to delay gratification, an inability to assert control, to assert limits, and one needs to push forward and mature to get past that and move into a mature state of reality of their own inner world. So too, by all of mankind and by the history of humanity itself. And so the 10 generations from Adam until Noah were the Ni'urim stage of the history of the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then brings a flood to totally wipe out the Ni'urim stage of human history. As we mentioned before, not unlike a mikveh, right? The whole world is covered in water. There's a mikveh that comes to purify the world, purify the arayos, the untempered arayos of the world, the lack of boundaries of the world, lack of self-control of the world. And then out from the other side emerges Noah and his three sons. And Noah, through Shem, Ham, and Yefet, come to create this new, mature, post-Mubble reality, post-Mubble world of maturity. And that's why at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can promise that he will never again bring a bubble to the world, because at that point, humanity has progressed to a stage where that would never be a reality again. So having left that was a good 5-minute recap of everything that we did from the beginning of the semester until now. Right? So we're caught up. We're back. We're fresh, ready to go forward. Now in the next, we have, like I mentioned in the email, we have a nice few weeks really straight, 5.5 weeks, Monday, Wednesday, to really kind of start to create some traction and really get into the heart and soul of Sefer Bereishit. But taking things to the next stage within Parshat Noach, let's see what happens right after we leave the Teva. So right after we leave the Teva, right after Noach walks out of the Teva, we have a somewhat of an odd story. What does Noach do? What's the first thing that Noach does when he leaves the Teva? After the Mizbeach and the Korbanot and the Brit and the rainbow and all of the promises, what will be? What's this first story of Noach in the New World? Noach goes and he plants a vineyard. We have to get to the grapes. He plants a vineyard. He waits and then he makes wine from those grapes and he gets drunk. Right, we're in, if you follow along in your Chumashim, we're reading the story in Perek Tet, Pasuk Yudchet. It's Yudchet Tachachet, this story. So Noach becomes drunk, and something happens with Cham. Cham goes in and does something negative to Noach, which Chazal assume is something negative within the realm of Arayot. Something happens there. And he goes and he tells his brothers, Shem and Yefet. Shem and Yefet go and then carefully cover their father, Noach. Noach wakes up the next morning and realizes that something had happened and understands what it is that had happened. And based on the reactions or the actions of each of his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Yefet, he then gives brachot and klalot to these three individuals, and then we're told that's the end of Noach's life, as far as we're interested in Noach. Very odd, interesting story coming out of the Teva and into the New World. And what's so significant about this story, and what role does this story play in the development of the history of mankind? Let's look ahead to the next few paragraphs. All of this is in source number one in your sheets as well. Let's take a look into the next few paragraphs. Basically all of Perek Yud. What's happening in Perek Yud? What is Perek Yud doing for us? What's happening here? Not all of Noah's descendants per se, you're 100% right, but specifically the descendants of Shem, of Ham, and of Yefet. We get the descendants of Noah's three children. The Torah is listing these descendants because once the world was wiped out, only Noah and his children remained. What this means is that Shem, Ham, and Yefet are the three foundational building blocks, the three points of origin of the new world after the Mabul. Taking it one step deeper, if we examine the actual names that are listed in these paragraphs, they're not just the names of individuals. What are they the names of?
Nations.
All of the 70 nations of the world, the Shi'im Umot Ha'olam, are listed here. They're presented in this section and the descendants of Noach's children. And this is the key here. We see from this that all 70 nations of the world originate from Shem, Ham, and Yefet, from those three foundational building blocks of the new world. They're all branches of these three roots. This is stated explicitly in the Pesukim. If you take a look in the opening pasuk of the previous paragraph, the paragraph of that story, take a look in Perek Tet, Pasuk Yuchet, Vayu b'nei Noach hayotzim min ha'teva, Shem v'cham v'yefet. Again, the paragraph clearly indicating that the people that we're focusing on in this paragraph, despite the fact that it happens to Noach and he gives the brachot and the kolot, the focus of this paragraph is Shem, Cham, and Yefet. Next pasuk, Shlosha Eile b'nei Noach u'me'ele naftza kol ha'aretz. From these three would all of the people in the world come forth. Now that was obvious. Because if everybody gets wiped out, except for Noah, and Noah has three sons, then the whole world is obviously going to come from his three sons. But look at the way then the next section wraps up. Perak Yud Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Eile b'nei Shem l'mishpechotam yulshanotam be'aratzotam l'goyehem. Next pasuk, last pasuk. Eile mishpechot b'nei Noach l'toldotam b'goyehem. These are the names of the families of b'nei Noach according to their generations, and all of the goyim, all of the nations that come out of them. U'me'eile nifredu ha'goyim ba'aretz achar ha'mabul. The diversity of nations are coming from the descendants of Noach, all of them. Coming either from Shem, from Ham, or from Yefet. Putting things back into context, this means that the actions of Shem, Ham, and Yefet in this story, and the brachot and klalot that they consequently received from Noah, actually define the nature and the essence of these three foundational building blocks of all of mankind and all of the diversity of the nations of the world. This means that if we understand the natures of Shem, Ham, and Yefet in this story, then we understand the root essence of all of the diversity of nations in the entirety of the world. And that's what we're going to set out to do. We understand the significance now of Shem, Ham, and Yefet? Questions, thoughts, comments?
Are these like, do they fit into like one of the threes?
I want to say yes, because all always have to overlap, but I haven't thought of it in that way before. So my answer is probably yes.
Okay.
I don't know how. Shem, Ham, and Yefet, we're going to understand through this story their essence and their nature, and by doing that, we will then understand basically the foundations of all of the Shivim Mot Olam, the entirety of the essence of the diversity of nations of the world. Let's start with Ham. Now, as I said before, something negative happens with Ham and his father. The pasuk is somewhat cryptic. It says in Perek Tet Pasuk Chav Aleph Chav Bet, Vayar Ham Avi Kenan et Ervat Aviv. Ham saw the erva, saw the nakedness of his father. Vayagid lishmei achav b'chutz. He told them to his two brothers outside. So first of all, the very fact that he saw the nakedness of his father, and that that's what he's talking about, and that that's what's causing the whole stir, clearly shows that it's focused and revolving around Arayot. Chazal take it much, much farther than that, and they assume that either Ham castrated his father, or had relations with his father, or both. Chazal is assumed that something very negative happened in that tent, and that's what Noah was able to tell exactly what had happened when he woke up the next morning. But something is very, very wrong with Ham in the realm of Arayot. Whether you want to take a look at it on the simple pshat of Vayaret Arvat Aviv, taking it to the next level, which Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, and you have on your source sheet, I think the Rashi is also on your source sheets, in source number 2. He brings down both opinions from the Gemara. But this is not the first time, according to Chazal, that Ham has struggled with issues of Arayot. Where did Ham previously struggle with issues of Arayot? So the Gemara says something incredible. Take a look in source number 3. Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin says, it quotes two psukim as a proof, but on the underline, Va'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mikan amru she'ne'esru b'tashmish hamitza. Rabbi Yochanan learns out from these psukim that there was an isser of having relations on the teva. While everybody and everything, all the animals were on the teva, no being was allowed to have relations on the teva. Tanu Rabbanan, shlosha shimshu b'teva. There were three who violated this isser. Who were the three who violated this isser on the teva? The kulam laku, all of them in different ways were punished. Two of them we're not going to deal with. One of them is our topic. The kelev, the dog. The orev, the raven, which interesting because that needs to somehow play into the fact that the orev has a role in the pshat of the story as well. And then our topic, Cham. Cham was the only person to violate the Isser and have relations on the Teva. What's the meaning of the fact that Cham doesn't follow this prohibition and has relations on the Teva during the Mabul? What does it mean that he's not able to hold himself back, to have the self-control from having relations on the Teva? What does he now represent in this new world? Say it better, sharpen it.
It's representation of Araya.
Think back to the fact that there was probably an intentional reason that we recapped everything up until this point.
He stayed in his new
office. Excellent. Cham. The fact that Cham is still deeply connected to Arayot, first of all, in the Teva itself, meaning while the purification process of the world is happening, while the Ne'urim stage is being washed away, Cham is still immersed in that reality of Ne'urim. He's still unable to assert self-control. He's still unable to hold himself back. And so what he's going to represent is the previous generation of the Dor HaMabul in a post-Mabul world. The goal of the Mabul was to wash away the impurities of that previous generation and to save only the pure elements in Noach and in the Teva. Cham is bringing that pre-Mabul state that was supposed to have been wiped out in the flood into a post-Mabul world. He draws the impurity of the previous generation with him into the Teva, through the Teva, and then out of the Teva into the new world. This means that in a post-Mabul world, we're going to have a streak of pre-Mabul behavior that includes all the things we discussed, like a lack of self-control, a lack of self-discipline, a desire for physical gratification, and specifically a manifestation of an immersion in our eyes. This is going to be an essential aspect of Cham and all of his descendants.
If the whole point of the model was to wipe away all this, why was Cham included on the Teva?
Cham, it would seem, had the potential, as one of the children of Noah, to hold himself back in such a way, but he made the choice to allow that Ne'urim to come with him, and we'll discuss in like 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes what that means practically and why that is also part of the process.
So it was like still in his like Nikudas Ketuvah almost.
I would say so. Okay. But either way, we'll see hashkafically how it fits in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Before we get there, when thinking about Arayot themselves, the Isur of Arayot, which parsha in the Torah is most focused on those issues? Right before Parshat Kedoshim. What? The Parshat Arayot at the very end of Achrimot that leads into Parshat Kedoshim, which we just read at Yom Kippur at Mincha, right? Very recently. If you take a look at that paragraph, which again defines for us what constitutes Arayot, look at how the Torah introduces that paragraph. Source number 4, Vayikra Perek Yudchet Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'mor. Daber el b'nei Yisrael ve'amarta lehem ani Hashem elokechem. Say unto b'nei Yisrael and tell them, I am Hashem their God. Kema'asei Eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba lo ta'asu. Like Eretz Mitzrayim, like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim, where you dwelled, don't do. Ukimaaseh Eretz Kanaan asher ani meviatchem shama lo ta'asu. And like the actions of Eretz Kanaan, which I'm taking you to in Eretz Yisrael, don't do. Uvechukotehem lo telechu. And don't go in their ways. The Torah introduces Parshat Arayot by saying, how, if you want to understand what Arayot is, look to Mitzrayim, look to Canaan. They are, in their essence, they are all about Arayot. And if you want to understand how to live a life that is anti-arayot, do the opposite of everything that you see in Mitzrayim and Canaan, because arayot is part of who they are. It's part of their essence. Now, is there a connection between these two nations of Mitzrayim and Canaan? The answer is yes and yes. There definitely is, and as Bracha said, not only are they related to each other, they are two of the primary descendants of Ham. It has to be so, because they're bringing forth what their great-great-great-great-grandfather Ham drew into the New World. If you take a look in your Chumashim, again, or in source number one, back into Bereshit, Perek Yud, Pasuk Vav, Ubnei Cham, the children of Cham, Kush Umitzrayim, Ufut Ukenaan. The two nations that embody Arayot are direct descendants of Cham. Again, this means that the deep issue of Arayot from the Dor Mabul travels through Cham into the post-Mabul world and overtly manifests in his descendants, specifically Mitzrayim and Canaan. So for example, when we think about the clash between Mitzrayim and the Mitzri culture, and later on Bnei Yisrael, the culture of Bnei Yisrael, we're reaching back to the issues of the Mabul itself. Our confrontation with Mitzrayim even concludes in almost exactly the same way. How does our confrontation with Mitzrayim end? With Yamsuf. But not just with Yamsuf. What happens at Yamsuf? Yeah. They're drowned in a private, personal Mabul of their own. That's how Mitzrayim is wiped out. Because again, these somehow are the same issues manifesting again and being dealt with again on a national level later on in history. Coming back in a certain way to your question, Bracha, as we discussed, the Mabul was a way of moving the world out of its Ne'urim stage and into a state of maturity and adulthood. If Cham is able to move through the Mabul and into a post-Mabul existence with this Ne'urim mentality intact, what does that mean not for just the world? What does that mean for every single individual? It means that even if we do the work necessary to mature and move past our own Ne'urim stage, our own youth, our own adolescence, into the stage of maturity and adulthood, it means that there can still be Cham aspects within us that are able to remain beyond that process. There can still be aspects of ourselves that can't let go of certain parts of that immaturity, of that lack of self-discipline, of the desire for physical pleasure that defines youth. Last year we defined things, we presented them in a way that was very black and white. We said that there are some people who do the work to get past the Ne'urim stage, to get past youth and adolescence, and that there are certain people who spend their entire lives still within youth and adolescence. What Cham brings out, and again, just like we did in the Bereshit Shirim, we took it one shir forward and we take it one step forward and refine it and point out that there are a lot more grays involved. Just like it's not Tov or Ra, there's layers of Tov and Ra within our actions. So too here, there isn't Ne'urim and adulthood. We might primarily be in Ne'urim at a certain point, and we might primarily be in adulthood at a certain point if we mature to a certain place. But what Cham brings out is that it's more nuanced than that. That even those of us who do the necessary work to move past our Ne'urim stage still have to continue to work to destroy the Ne'urim parts of ourselves that do survive that process. If we don't, then those parts of ourselves will sit in the background and erupt when given the opportunity to do so. This is something that we see all the time. There are certain individuals that we can look at in the world, that we see in pop culture, that we see in headlines, that we see in government, wherever you want to look, there are certain individuals who are very clearly individuals who have never left their Ne'urim stage. We can imagine what those people might be like. Hopefully we don't know anybody who's in their late 20s, early 30s, though it's very likely that we do, who have never left their Urim stage behind at all. But we can also, if we think a little bit more clearly about it, there are individuals who have moved past that Ni'ulim stage. People who generally do act with a conduct that is dignified, distinguished, mature. They act in a certain way. But if we, I mean, it's not that hard, especially thinking over the last couple of weeks for sure. It's not that hard just to look back at the headlines and to look back at people in history and politics and government and pop culture, and again, in our own lives, where that may be the majority of the way that they present themselves. But give them 1 second to sift back into that immature phase, that immature space. It'll erupt immediately and show its face that that Cham aspect of that person is still there. And so it's not just about moving from the Urim to adulthood. It's the consistent process of making sure that we're removing all aspects of Cham within ourselves, even within a reality of adulthood. That's what Cham did within the scope of human history. And that's what we all, again, need to do in the scope of our own Olam Katan. Finish up with Cham, a name always indicates an essence. If one wants to understand the essence of a person, of a thing, one always can go back to the name as a starting point. And we even think about it. What does Cham's name mean? Heat, hot, passion, impulsiveness, right? That's what Cham is all about. He's a heated, passionate, impulsive individual. The Maharal takes it one step further and even says that there's a connection between Cham and the word Chomer, physicality. That he's a purely physical being, and that's what Cham is all about. There's a lot on Cham. But Cham is very important. He finishes off that discussion of this pre-Mubble, post-Mubble world. But in the post-Mubble world, Baruch Hashem, Cham is only 1/3 of the building blocks, the foundational aspects of the 70 nations of the world. Who else do we have? Shem and? So let's start with Yefet. Continuing this concept of focusing on the name, what does Yefet mean? It means beauty. Yofi. Yofi means beauty. And that's in fact exactly what Noah tells Yefet in his bracha to Yefet. He says, Yaft Elokim liYefet v'yishkon ba'oal Shem. The beauty of God is to Yefet, and he will be able to dwell within the tent of Shem. There's an innate aspect of beauty to Yefet. Thinking in terms of the nations of the world, what nation of the world is most linked to the concept of beauty? Yavan, Greece. So what are we not going to be surprised to find? That Yavan is going to be a descendant of Yefet. And if you take a look inside, in Perek Yud, Pasuk Bet, B'nei Yefet, you'll recognize a bunch of nations here, some of which we'll come back to over time, but B'nei Yefet, Gomer, Umagog, Umadai, V'Yavan, V'tuba Lameshech V'tiras. Yavan is one of the direct descendants of Yefet. Now, if we look at the story of what actually happens, it's interesting that Yefet gets a bracha, but clearly doesn't get as strong or as positive a bracha as Shem. Shem is clearly the choicest of the three sons. And the question is, why is that? Why does Yefet get the short end of the stick if he did everything right? Let's go back to the psukim. Let's go back to the story. Perek Tet, Pasuk Chav Gimel. After being told of what Cham did to his father, Pasuk Chav Gimel, Vayikach Shem Vayefet Tasimla, Shem Vayefet both pick up this garment, Vayasimu Al Shchem Shnehem, and they put it on both of their shoulders, Vayilchu Achoronit, and they walk backwards into the tent, Vayichasu Et Ervat Avihem, and they cover up the nakedness of their father, Upnehem Achoronit Ervat Avihem Laru, and they make sure not to see the nakedness of their father. So who's involved in covering up the nakedness of Noah? Shem and Yefet. Who's better of them? based on what? Show me one word in that entire pasuk that indicates that Shem is better than Yefet.
How do we know that Shem is better than Yefet?
The bracha that he gets is much more lofty. Yefet is told, Yaf Elokim Yefet v'yishkon b'alei Shem. The beauty of God goes to Yefet, and he'll be able to dwell within the tent of Shem, because Shem is up on top. And Shem gets the bracha, V'yumar Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. So I'll tell you the one word. There is one word. What's the one word? Vayikach. Why Vayikach, Jessica? Right, as you hold your pocket-sized Chumash Rashi in hand, Rashi picks up on the fact, based on Chazal, that it says Vayikach. What about Vayikach? It's singular. That Shem is the one. It says Vayikach Shem. Shem is the one who singularly goes and takes action to go and covers up his father. And Yefet definitely joins in. But he only joins in to his brother's actions. Meaning, Shem was somehow more inherently linked to the necessity of covering up his father, and Yefet agrees with it, understands it, and goes along with it. And we know, looking down at history, at nation like Yavon, we can understand what's happening here. Yavon, Greece, right? The next holiday is coming up, it's in a little bit of a while, but we can already start preparing for Hanukkah. Right? When we think about Greece, and we think about Yavon, we think about the story of Hanukkah. Yavon is a nation that's obsessed with beauty. And it's a great thing. Except for the fact that it's broken. It's broken in a certain way. Meaning, as long as something is beautiful, it's okay. There are no boundaries when it comes to the realm of beauty. There's no concept that there's something deeper or more important than external beauty. We see this explicitly from their Olympics. Their Olympics were played without any clothing on, because if the person looked beautiful, there was no reason to cover anything up. There was no sense of tzniut. There was nothing negative about Arayot in that way, again, still struggling with issues of Arayot. That was fine. And there were a lot of other things, if you look back at Greek history, that was going on in terms of issues with Arayot as well. As long as it was beautiful externally, it was okay. Why? Because there's no inherent meaning within anything. The whole struggle in Hanukkah between the Jews and the Greeks is, not is there beauty. They didn't try to physically wipe us out. It was a theological battle. Is there spirituality within the physicality? Is there deeper meaning beyond the external beauty? Shem somehow understands that there's something inherently wrong going on here. And he goes to pick up the simla. What's Yefet's motivation to join in covering up his father? Based on what we just said.
Just because his brother's doing it.
It wasn't beautiful. It was disgusting. It was disfigured according to Chazal. His father was in a terrible state. He was drunk. He was a wreck. He'd just been assaulted or mutilated. So Yefet joins in because what's happened inside of that tent isn't beautiful anymore. And since it's not Yefet, he has an inherent understanding of that much, and he joins in with Shem and goes to cover up his father. But it's Cham, excuse me, the opposite of Cham, but it's Shem, not Cham, Lefet. It's Shem who understands that there's something inherently there that needs to be covered up. So let's get to Shem himself. Continuing on with our train of thought of starting with the name and saying that a name indicates an essence. What is Shem's name? His name is Name. That's odd, right? You imagine two parents going through the baby name book and finally just giving up and being like, you know what, I'm out. Let's call him Name and move on, right? Like, what happened there? Like, they couldn't find anything else? What does it mean that Shem is called Shem? So let's come back to what we've been claiming the entire time. What is a name? What does it indicate? An essence. I was only able to find this when I kept on searching for it in the Malbim as one example, just as to see in the text a proof of everything I've been saying, but it's Mikubal, it's accepted amongst the Mepharshim. This quote comes, this explanation comes from somewhere else, but says the Malbim in source number 6. Hagida na shemecha, tell me your name. Why did Yaakov desperately want to know of the name of the angel that he was fighting with? Hagida na shemcha, rotze la'amod al mehut inyano. He wanted to know the essence of this malach. The atzmuto, the tachlit b'yato, what's its purpose in its creation? And how can he know the mahut, the inyan, and the essence of the creation of this malach? What was the only way to know it? By knowing his name. Shahashem more al ha'atzmut. It's the key line. That a name always indicates an essence. That's what a name is. There's just one text that's a proof of the fact that a name indicates an essence. And by naming him Shem, what Noah was indicating, what Kadosh Baruch Hu, when giving him the Ruach HaKodesh to name him Shem, is that Shem's essence is to connect to see and relate to the essence within all things. Not to get lost in the physicality like Cham. Not to stop at the external beauty like Yefet. But to see within the physical world to the essence of a thing. That's what Shem is. He's all about seeing the spiritual essence within that physical reality. If you change the nikudot of the word Shem, what word do you get?
Sham.
There. When we want to know what the essence of a thing is, we look for its spiritual root. We look there. What's Shem or Sham in plural, if you were to try to pluralize it, so to speak?
Names.
In Hebrew. Shemayim. It's not the actual thing. Shemot is the correct answer. Shemayim is if you pluralize the word Shem. Shemayim. Because Shemayim, up there, Shemayim, is where all the Shems are. That's where all the Shamim are. If you want to know what the destination of all things are, what the root of all things are, what the essence of all things are, you look towards Shemayim. The whole goal of us being in this world is to get to there, is to get to Sham. Is to get to that essence. And therefore we don't live in the Shemayim, we live on the Aretz, Milashon. Milashon. Stick with our theme. Eretz. Milashon Ratz, which means to run. This world is a process of running, of moving towards Sham, Shamayim. Eretz is the goal. The goal of being in the Eretz is to keep moving and getting to the source of all things. Getting to Shamayim, getting to the root of all Shams, the root of all Shames. That's what Shem is all about. He's relating to the essence, the spiritual essence within everything. When Shem goes and he covers his father, he's relating to the essence of this struggle, of what this struggle is all about. So far we've been focusing really on one aspect of the struggle, which is something which the world struggled with all the way back in the times of Noah and continues to struggle with until today and will only get resolved in the end of days. And we keep coming back to this because it is one of the core struggles of reality, which is Arayot. Shem understands that there is something essentially wrong in this picture. And so he goes out of a deep understanding of tzniut, not getting into the negative social connotations that we get stuck up on in this day and age, but the heart and the essence of what tzniut is. But tzniut is the opposite of arayot, of not running after one's physical pleasures, of not putting oneself out there, of not having a lack of boundaries, of creating boundaries, creating meaningful boundaries, of a respect of that privacy. Shem understands the essence of that. And he goes and he walks in to cover up his father, not because his father is not beautiful like Yefet's going in there to do. Because he understands the essence of tziut, that's what's being violated here. And he reinstates the tziut of his father. It's interesting to me that, again, we're focusing on one aspect of it, but to me there's two very clear aspects of struggle that come out in this story, which shouldn't be surprising. There are two things that we're going to keep coming back to again and again and again over the course of all of Chumash, and for those who learn all of Hashkafa. One of them is the issue of Arayot. What's the other issue? Eating. We always come back to eating and Arayos, the two things that are most linked to Kedusha. And if you think about it, those are the two things that we struggle with here. In this story, what happens? Noah comes out of the Teva. First thing he does is plant a vineyard and get drunk. According to Chazal, one of the fruits of the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra was grapes. But somehow this, once again, even in this new world, falling almost in the same way that Adam did, of going there and getting drunk and having an issue in the realm of eating, and then immediately followed in the next pasuk with some sort of issue in Arayot, just like with Adam and Chava. We had two issues. We had the issue of Shneyam Arumim V'lo Yitboshashu V'yavo Anachash, and the issue of eating from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. These seemingly continuously coming around and being the core issues that led the world down a negative path in the first place, and even in the new world, continuing to reinstate the core struggle of what this world is going to be about. A struggle here more subtly with Achila, and more overtly a struggle over issues of Arayot versus Tzniut. Issues of this world, Chomer, physical pleasure, physical beauty, or getting to the spiritual essence beyond beneath things, and trying to move toward that essence of being focused on the spiritual essence of all things, which shame comes to embody. It's interesting to me also, my Rebbe didn't say this, but I think it's Pashut, and I saw it also reflected more overtly in a Kliyakar. But in that same Rashi that you saw when you looked at the word Vayikach, it says something very interesting, as long as we're going down this road. If you look at the Rashi in source 5 on your sheets, Vayikach Shem Vayefet, Ein Ketiv Kan Vayikua La Vayikach, Limar Al Shem Shanit Ameitz Mitzvah Yoter Miyefet, that Shem was jumping to do this more than Yefet. And look what it says, almost cryptically. Since Shem was the one to initiate and cover up his father, Lekach zachu banav litalit shel tzitzit. Because of this, the children of Shem would end up getting the mitzvah of tzitzit. First of all, that was a giveaway. Who becomes the main child of Shem? Abraham and eventually Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael, of course, are going to come from Shem, because Shem is all about essence, and that's who we are. We're a people who are always going toward that essence. We have to come from Shem. And, in fact, something which also struck me when I was preparing today, because I remember teaching this in a slightly different form in a different semester of Yerushalayim, I was like, of course, that makes beautiful sense. What is the name of the book that is the book not of the birth of Avraham, but the book of the birth of Klal Yisrael? Shmot. And for those who remember our Shmot discussions, that was actually a very big role in it, and is clearly going to be a theme of the book, as it's the name of the book. And name indicates Nesset, the name of the book of Shmot is Shmot. But the book that gives birth to Bnei Yisrael is called Shemot, and the person who gives birth to Abraham eventually is Shem. All continuously coming back around to this clear central issue of seeing beneath the surface of reality and going toward the essence of things, not being caught up in physical pleasure. So what does he get? It says, because he gets tzitzit. Now why this jumped out at me is because many times, there are many different gemarot about tzitzit, but one of the primary gemarot about tzitzit is what does tzitzit come to do? It comes to protect a person against Arayos. The Gemara tells the story of a man who was going and he was going to have relations with a prostitute, and the tzitzit come and slap him across the face. And that's what saves him from doing the Avera. And that's the Gemara that makes this linkage between tzitzit and Arayot. And so it says, because Shem went and covered his father and understood the essence of things and fought this reality of Arayot, he zochet a tzitzit, which itself protects a person from Arayos. And in terms of this concept of tzniut, look at what Yefet gets according to this Gemara, as Rashi quotes it. V'yechet zachal l'kvura l'banav. Yefet zochet to burial of his children, and I thought that maybe there also seems to be an issue of a respect for the physical body, that when the body dies, that it also is given respect and being covered up in the ground and putting back to its place. Not relating to the essence of things, but at least giving the external body its proper kavod at the end of the life. That's my own understanding. But when I saw that Rashi, all kinds of things jumped out at me. In any event, let's wrap up our discussion for today. So what we see is that the story of Noah and his sons coming out of the Teva is very much defining who these three sons are, and therefore defining for us the fundamental building blocks of all 70 nations of the world. Ham, in his obsession with physicality, in his bringing a pre-Mabul mentality, a Ne'urim mentality into an adult world, which is true internally in our Olam Katan and externally in the world itself in the course of history, specifically through Mitzrayim and Kena'an. We see Yefet producing Yavan, focused on external beauty, recognizing that beauty is important, that there is meaning within things, but only on the external side. And then that produces Yavan. And finally, we have Shem, who himself is indicative of the essence of all things, of reaching to Shemayim, reaching for Shemayim, running on the Eretz to get to Shemayim, to get to the ultimate goal, to get to the spiritual root. And that, of course, is what will eventually produce Klal Yisrael, the people who are, in our essence, focused on reaching the essence, beneath the surface, the essence of all things. From there, extend, as the Pesukim say, all 70 nations of the world. And with that, we should be wrapping up Parshat Noach. But there's one final story in Parshat Noach. What's the one final story? Story of Migdal Bavel. So what we'll do next time in our last shiur on Parshat Noach is dive into the story of Migdal Bavel and see how it fits into the structure of defining these 70 nations and finally taking us to a place where we can then reach the 71st nation, which is our goal the entire time, the nation of Klal Yisrael with the birth of Abraham. So we'll do that Bezrat Hashem on Wednesday. Shkoach Ervin.